Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knock-O-Nation podcast show. Oh, Knock-O-Nation podcast show.
Hey-o, it's another episode of the Knock-O-Nation podcast show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks. That's Josh Brown.
Hi.
You did that one last week, Josh. What the heck? Like, oh. I feel like you're just mailing it in. Like, oh. you know, you're just being Mr. Happy again.
Yeah.
And
I was a gay redneck last week. I'll be a woke.
Okay.
I'll be a woke,
gay redneck.
A woke gay Kemp detractor.
Gay redneck.
Okay. Okay.
Did you guys hear he's making us go out to eat Friday?
Josh, gay people don't have to have a lisp. Just
what? Okay.
JT, that's my other host over there. What's up, JT?
Hey.
Oh my gosh.
Speaking of
which slot are you going to?
I can't wait. It's a force of nature down there right now. I've been quarantined for 4 weeks, and it's kind of Amazon rainforest in my coronal ridge.
Do you
ready
give
to get
them
taken
something
care of?
To work with,
you guys?
Or do you give them something to work with us at the salon?
Are people seeing this on video right now?
Do you go ahead and take the dingleberries out and then go?
Mm.
Wow!
All natural, baby.
Oh my gosh.
I've been out of toilet paper for 2 weeks.
But for those of you who may not know, this week, Josh and JT and Ken can all actually see each other while recording for the very first time. They're just hearing us.
Are they just hearing us?
Are
we have a video?
Move to video, but at this point in time.
I love when we get together at night and explore. Together.
How can they get the video?
Like, is there a way they can?
They do, yeah.
They do have those.
Yeah. Don't they have video
like
podcasts?
Said, we're working on it.
Okay.
It is important to let people know what they're missing.
And I think that's important to let people know what they're missing.
Josh is quite the hairy man, though, so I'm not real sure if he's nude or not.
I am rubbing my balls against the video screen right now. And no one knows
it
except
is,
for you. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Stairway to heaven.
I'm going to just mute that camera and not going to see it. Oh, hey,
no,
fellas.
Don't mute me.
On our new camera thing, for the record, if you have to cough or your phone starts ringing, you see that nice little camera button up there? I mean, that nice little microphone button on your screen?
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
You can click that.
No. Yeah.
Mute you.
Can you just click that, Kenny, from now on? And maybe me and JT will just
we'll just carry on from there. Kenneth,
that's your second
middle finger
murder today. Your first one was when you told our friend Corey. The new thing on Twitter is like, what celebrity who do I look like, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, what did you say?
I said the Little People Big World version.
What was
the
name of the show you referenced?
Golly.
I originally typed the Vern Troyer version, but I was afraid like that might be too old a reference for him because he's kind of a young fella and he might not remember Vern Troyer. So then I went with Little People Big World instead.
Well, that means I look like him too, because true story. Last week, Corey threw a video up of him playing Tennessee Whiskey or something on the back stoop of some house. Okay, I open the video. Okay, Nikki walks by behind me. She goes, "Hey, where are you there? I don't recognize that house."
Oh man!
And I was like, "This is not me. This is Corey."
I just did it based off of his profile picture. Later in the day, I saw he posted like a more recent picture or something of himself, and he looked totally different. Like that's not the.
That's what I think.
So he's hotter than you think.
Hot.
You're saying about Corey?
Yeah, of course you do, Josh. Josh, have you ever heard of this guy called Narcissus? Did you ever hear that story?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No.
it's this old Greek story of a guy who was playing in a meadow one day, and he went over by this nice little pond that was close by.
Yeah.
And he was looking down into the pond, and there was a sprite on the other side of the water that looked just like him, and he fell in love. And his actual love came around, and ended up it wasn't actually a sprite. He was just seeing his reflection in the water, and he was so in love with himself that he actually died. It's kind of the story of Josh Brown.
I've never felt more connected to a story than that story right there.
I'm glad.
I know it reminds me of looking at the pictures of the album cover shoot you did for your EP that I believe went aluminum. what was it called? Yeah, your little music thing, you know, when you're on the... Hang on.
JT, there's that one. There's that one, but the better one... Oh, I've got to wait for him to come back. He's going to get something right now, but it's important that he hears this entire conversation. Because there's actually a more narcissistic Josh Brown picture that exists. Let me let him get his earbuds.
The man is wearing a Nakahoma Nation t-shirt.
Yes, he's like
during
the
recording
man.
Of Nakahoma Nation.
Josh,
let me know if you guys want some copies, okay?
Oh, my God.
This thing's...
That's a CD.
Oh, what is
Josh?
Is that a
rubbing
CD?
Rubbing the back of his head. Rubbing the back of his head.
I don't think I have anything
confident.
To play that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh
my God. I'm hurting from writing all these songs.
Am I bald yet? That's like the real question. But Josh, there's actually a worse picture of that of you being narcissistic. And if anyone ever read your articles on Tomahawk Take, there is a picture of you throwing a baseball up into the air.
So gay. It's so embarrassing.
I love that one. I'm not kidding you when I tell you it's saved on my phone.
I hate that picture so much. I hate that picture so much.
Swear it's in my phone.
What's worse
so
to me is
it.
Like that's...
I love it. Because it looks like you're a big Braves fan that wants to help me refinance my mortgage loan.
Or maybe you are writing for Talking Chop and you're about to move to Arizona. Like that's the feel I get from seeing you gently fondle the ball up and down in the air. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Josh looks like he's having a stroke right now talking to us. It's pretty...
I get the reference. No, I'm not even like...
Well, you're like holding your face.
This is a great management tool, Kenny, because I'm not perusing the internet. I just see you guys in JT's Dickey Farms cap that I want. Where'd you get that? Dickey Farms? I want one of those.
Musella, Georgia. Yeah, Dickey Farms.
Oh,
it's a gay bar.
Wow.
No, it's from the guy goes, I bought the hat. I was in there, and I had like a gift card to spend. And they didn't have a lot of stuff I wanted. And it was like, I was like, how much for a hat? And they were like, $10. I was like, cool, I'll take one. And he goes, you like wearing camo hats? And I was like, yeah, I got a couple. He's like, my brother-in-law's got a whole bunch of them. His name's Alan Jackson.
Oh, my God.
He sings country music. And I was like, you just wanted a reason to tell me
that
your brother-in-law was Alan
Jackson.
My
brother-in-law was Alan Jackson. I'd be that guy.
Yeah. You just need an excuse. Did I tell you I know Alan Jackson? Like, okay,
nice.
Okay, cool, man.
So, fellas, how are you feeling? Are you feeling nervous about Governor Kemp forcing us all back out into the real world?
I'm in North Carolina, but if I was in Georgia back home with you guys, I'd be terrified, honestly, because I would be cooler about it if like, restaurants, for example, were set up to where there was separate seating and, like, I don't know, partitioned booths. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they had to follow, like, sanitary laws and stuff, you know?
That would make
me feel better about the situation.
I can see that would make me feel better, too. You know, another one would be if I had to go to a hair salon and they had to wash their hands, you know, and my head before they cut my hair every time. I think that would be like a really important
good
thing
point.
To not pass the virus from one person to the next. I'm just throwing that out there.
I've never been in a hair salon, Kenny, that wasn't like a dog pound.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So I mean, they just take you in roughshod, you know, and just go right. to town. Right.
Right. And every restaurant I've been to in Georgia, everyone's sitting on each other's laps. There's only one.
Oh, that's the best.
There's only one table. Everybody's feeding each other. Like, I'm sitting here, you're feeding me, I'm feeding JT. It's just weird.
That's so, like Dickey Farms. I mean, that's where JT, that's where he learned. Yeah.
That's wow. where they get the name from.
Yeah. It's like Dickey Farm to table.
I just, I think it's pretty sick that he wants to put people back to work and try to save small businesses. I think he's a disgusting human being.
I think it's disgusting that he values the local economy over the people and that he wants people to be able to make a living so they can continue to, yeah. you know, live and pay for things.
It's
even though they may die.
It's incredibly disgusting that he's the only governor in America that's doing this. Like, there's no other states that are also opening at the same time. You know, that would be totally, would just make more sense if there were like four other states mm-hmm. that were pretty much opening the exact same time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, can't believe he's doing this all by himself.
I find it funny that most of the people protesting, even before coronavirus, stayed at home and didn't work. So I don't see why they have to change anything. It's not really yeah. necessary for them. They can continue on business as usual. You know, they
I'm looking
like
forward
that,
to the National Guard at gunpoint marching my grandparents out to go make them go to the grocery store.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. I was on Twitter in 2016 telling everybody that Trump was going to be a dictator, mm-hmm. and now I'm on Twitter complaining that my governor is opening back up the states and he's not making people stay at home.
Okay, I can't be this sarcastic any longer. Also, fellas, how absolutely hysterical is it that every Democrat is now arguing for states' rights? It's the funniest thing I have ever seen since the Civil War when Democrats also argued for states' rights.
Today, on Twitter, I questioned. There was a video that popped up, and it wasn't from some weird website. It was a video of a news feed from MSNBC, mm-hmm. and the video was interview of this. A police officer, I think in Boston, like a fucking police chief, mm-hmm. and they were using drones. This is real life. Yeah. They're using yeah. drones to go around certain neighborhoods just to monitor people, make sure no one's like congregated. And I threw shade at that. Okay, at which point people were calling me a militant. One guy called me a cuck. One guy told me I should just go ahead and just start a militia.
Oh,
you know?
Nice.
Like, because I was
the Josh Brown militia. What would you call your militia? I want to know the name. Like, what would the name? Brown's Boonies? Would that be like the
we'd be the
Josh Brown shirts?
Oh, nice.
We'd be the
Josh too? Brown pants.
No, we'd be the 132nd Dinguses.
No, the 132nd. Not airborne dinguses. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Did y'all see where they put the pictures up showing Jacksonville Beach, Florida
yeah.
reopening?
Yeah.
I used to live in Jacksonville Beach. And I can tell you, Jacksonville Beach is never that crowded. By the way, that pier in the background, yeah, it's gone. A hurricane took that away last year.
That's great.
So I knew right away, I was like, that's not
great.
Heck, there's no way. Because there's not that many people in the middle of July. On Jacksonville Beach. Nobody goes to Jack's Beach. They all go to like Ponte Vedra or much nicer yeah. places. But
yeah.
you've got Amelia Island up here. You've got Ponte Vedra down here. Jacksonville Beach. It's like college kids go there to drink and like that's yeah. it. No one actually goes to the
yeah.
beach there.
Yeah.
What's crazy is if you speak out it. Yeah, if you speak out against this or like question this, then you are. And this is not like one or two little, you know, at Bubba 79 or at Trump sucks 87. No, these are like check marks. I sent you guys a link to one guy that I found on the internet Sunday, like the most woke writer I've ever found.
Yeah.
These people are actually writing articles about people like us who are kind of championing, you know, opening up the government as we are far right, white supremacists, like we got Confederate flags just waving, you know, we got our AK-47s. It's like, no, like most people, most rednecks I know are just like your normal run of the mill dude. And they just want to fucking go to Cracker Barrel.
Look, can I find like a middle ground here? Cause like for me, fellas, is this, why don't we leave the government closed and just open back up all the businesses, and I think we'll be in a much better place if we're just 100% honest about this.
It took everything in my body not to get into it with a good friend of mine from high school. Her Facebook post the other day was, "Oh, I thought you guys were all pro-life. Got it." And I was going to be like, well, I thought you were pro-choice. You know, it seems you don't like having the option of what to do. I enjoy having choices in my life and being able to choose whether or not to stay home or go out to dinner and do what's best for me and my family. So it is what it is. Yeah. And you guys are all worried about being sick. Most of you guys are going to die in car accidents, let's be honest. Most of you guys are going to have heart failure.
Heart disease.
You're going to get cancer. You're not going to die of corona. You're going to.
And the question is,
death rate of life is 100%, by the way.
Yeah, 100%. So, really? You don't get out alive.
And the question, like today, our friend Chris Fought told me, he responded to one of my
tweets. Oh, I unfriended him.
He
sorry.
He said that I almost blocked him today on Twitter. And it's like I don't block anybody, dude. I almost blocked him today on Twitter because he responded to one of my tweets and he said, how would you, he goes, would you put your life in danger or something for your, for
he
your
daughter?
He
said something about your wife and kid. I remember that. Like, you're risking your wife and kid or something like that.
Yeah. If the virus spreads to your house or something stupid like that, you know, and it's like, you fucking idiots. It's not a question of that. Like, it's a question of, should the government make you stay at home? No, they shouldn't.
Right.
That's right. All I'm saying. I'm not saying you
should
have.
You
should
be forced
seriously.
To go out. You know what's saying? You even have to leave on Friday.
Our friend.
To
Casey,
be fair, look, we would all live to a much longer age if the government said we just deliver food to your homes and no one ever leaves their house ever. We'd all probably live to be much older than we. You know, there'd be people that
No. My wife would kill me.
Die.
My wife.
Well,
that
happens
kill me.
Too. But you wouldn't have to worry about dying in car accident. You leave the house, you're accepting a certain element of risk. A lot of people die because they stepped out the front door, and that was their biggest mistake. That happens. Like you said, the death rate is 100% in life. What are you going to do? At a certain point, what are you willing to give up? My great aunt didn't leave the house for like 50 years. Her fiance, actually, real story, played for the Macon Peaches at Luther Williams Field. And in like 1930-something, his name was Peter Mann. I think you'd probably find something online about him. He was killed at the plate. Hit by a pitch and died. You guys are baseball historians. I don't know if you ever heard about a guy named Peter Mann in Macon, Georgia. And she never remarried and literally was like, you know, the old maid, you know, that's just a homebody for her entire life. That was my great-great aunt Beck. She lived next door in a duplex to my great-grandmother. And she died at like 99 and a half years old. And she was miserable and angry and hated everyone. And I could stay home and probably live to be 100 and hate everything.
I thought Mike Rowe had a fantastic post about this. You remember the Dirty Jobs guy that does voiceovers for Greatest Catch and all that stuff? Mike Rowe, he talked about it, and he said, look, as Americans, recognize we aren't safety first people. Like, and he said, you learn this if you go to any company. We operate safety third, and that is we consider safety. Safety is something we think about, and it is an important thing to think about, but if we were going to be safe, no one would ever be allowed to drive a car over 15 miles an hour again.
Right.
Because that would cut down car accidents by like 30, probably by like 90% if you wanted to get down to at least fatal car accidents. No one would be allowed to drink alcohol and then start a vehicle. And like, we have laws against that, but we would literally make it so you can't. Like, it would be impossible if you were just going to be safe. If you were going to be safe, probably even better than that, we just ban alcohol in general so that no one ever had a problem with it anymore, right? Because that actually works. But the truth is, like, everything in life has a balance of risk-reward, and that risk has the word risk, I mean, it inherently means you're risking something. Right. You're not being safe. That's the whole point. Like, and JT, you're the gambling man. Like, everything has an element of gambling to it.
Gamble when you get behind the wheel every day.
Look, there's a bunch of people on Twitter, a bunch of males that are celibate and have no shot at ever having a girl because they're scared of being rejected and the risk of saying, hey, girl, what's your name? You know, because they have this idea they'd rather just be in their mom's basement and be safe than do something different, you know?
Wow, just because he met a girl at the gym.
I'm in my own basement right now.
What is it about, like...
JT sliding in there.
I'm shaking right now, guys.
What, anyway. what, it, What is it about like this situation and in this this mindset that makes people think that like Governor Cuomo and like these people like they're so hyper obsessed about like if we lose one life from this, it'll be worth it. You know, that's the dumbest shit. That's so
you're gonna
dumb.
Lose every like, life. Everyone's gonna these, die. Oh,
I see these things all day. Like if we save one life, it's worth shutting down.
I said this in almost
for
sincerity.
Another month.
For,
no, it's not.
For Ken, I don't really have to worry about you. For Josh, I say this because I love you. Please come to terms with the fact that you're going to die, and you need to be comfortable with the fact of knowing wherever it is that you believe you're going to go. And I'm not going to sit here and testify to everybody, but certain point in life, you need to be considering the fact that I'm going to leave this world, and I need to come to grips with that. And I need to know whatever I'm going to believe, I need to come to terms with it. People are so concerned about, well, what if it causes someone to die?
They're crazy.
They're all going to die. I cannot lose sleep over what happens to somebody else's grandmother. You know what I mean?
William
you know,
Shatner you know had part- a fantastic song called You're Gonna Die. I've sent this to Josh before. I don't know if he's ever actually listened to it because he thought I was just trolling. But William Shatner, the guy that played, you know,
T.J. Hooker.
Captain Kirk on... Yeah, also played T.J. Hooker. Yep. Mm-hmm. Captain Kirk, though, himself, he had a couple of CDs that he put out, and one of them, he has a fantastic black spiritual-based music that is You're Gonna Die is the entire chorus of the song. And he has, like, a big choir behind him singing. It's fantastic. You really got to listen to this sometime. But, yeah, I mean, the whole point of the song is we're all going to die. Maybe not today. Maybe it's next year. And then he goes through naming people's names, like Johnny yep. Cash, dead. You know, like, and he goes through and names
it,
a whole bunch of dead
people. It does stand
people,
out to me,
you know?
The fact that you're seeing a lot of people who think that you're seeing people that think that dying is the absolute worst thing that could possibly happen to them. And then you're seeing a lot of people that say dying is inevitable and it's going to happen to me and I'm okay with that. I'm not willing to give up everything because one day I am going to die. And if God decides to take me with coronavirus, God decides to take me with coronavirus. You know? Because look, I can't sit here and worry about protecting
we're talking about
your great-great aunt because she's 95 and might get coronavirus. If you're 95 years old, every day is dangerous.
But it's something
you're
else.
You're almost
it's,
on your way out.
It's something. It's not. It's something else that transcends like spirituality and like churchy. Because back in the day, like, okay, I'm growing up, it's the late 80s, early 90s, and I've got a bunch of friends who aren't in Christian homes, and culture, just life was just different. I think it was looser. You know, Jerry Seinfeld has a joke about this, about how back in the day it was just like, you know, how he grew up, you know, hanging on the back of pickup trucks and shit, and like everything was dirty and gross, and you got snot running out, and you cut your arm, and you just... You don't go to the doctor, and like, it was just different. Like, I don't know what it is or how to articulate it, but I feel like, and some of it I think is like, I think our culture used to have more fun. Mm. Maybe there was more outdoor people. I don't know.
So let me throw this out there, and I don't know if this is true or not. Let's discuss it. I feel like this whole Western culture that we have. If you've ever been around Buddhists, they don't freak out near as much. Like, they kind of get this, like, Buddhist people have this thing of, I don't really know if what just happened to me is good or bad. You know, there's this story of this, one of the main tenets of Buddhism has this story where this guy, he's walking down the road and his cow gets killed and they're like, okay, you should be really sad. And he's like, I don't know. So the next day, the emperor sends people to his town to try to recruit soldiers. And because his cow died, they don't take his son to go to war. And they leave his son there with him. And he's like, okay, so maybe it was a good thing the cow died. But they're like, so you should be happy about this. And he's like, maybe. And so then because his son is there, and I don't remember all the details of it, but because his son is there, basically they're working on the farm the next day, the son, has an accident and breaks his leg. And so like it goes through this whole thing of, I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's bad. I just live and exist in the moment and I'm there. So in our Western culture, we kind of like do the opposite side of that. Like we think that the more information we have, the more we can determine if something is good or bad. If we think the more information we have, like people really think that if we have more information about Corona.
Yeah, we talk about this in baseball terms.
Yeah.
People think that like if they have access to StatCast.
100%.
Mike Petrello was tweeting about this earlier this week. I think Sunday night he said would have been the first ever Nerdcast. And it was going to be a Mets and I think Indians game, and they were going to have a StatCast thing. Goes to your point, like there's this whole culture of people in our baseball world who just we built a brand making fun of these people, but like they think that because they have all this stuff, they know it, they know everything.
And I'm guilty of it. I mean, like I'm not just picking on people on the outside. I'm very much the type like if I just have more information, then I can somehow magically control more about my life. Thanks, Josh. I needed to see your nipples right now. That makes for a good momentary exciting. It keeps me perky.
What's that third one doing down there?
It's smiling, I think, JT. But you know, I think sometimes like this idea that if I have more information about the stock market, then I can suddenly be rich. If I had more information about Josh, then I could suddenly be better friends with him. You know, if I had more information about the perfect video, then I would make the perfect video in Twitter. We would suddenly be like the biggest brand on Twitter. You know, this idea that more information leads to more success, when we know for a fact that's not true. Like look at Lane Adams. That dude knows a ton about launch angle and how to play baseball, and yet the only thing he can actually do on a baseball field is run fast. So
you suck, Lane Adams.
Wow. That's what Ninja.
And then you look at somebody like Brian Snicker, who doesn't have all the information a lot of times, who doesn't necessarily live and breathe on every last stat information, and yet he's a pretty dang good coach because he understands how to actually connect with players and relate to them, and he understands knowledge, you know, that's actually relationship based and different thing. Are you like hiding, Josh? I'm just trying to figure out like
no, sorry. My sciatica nerve is in sheer pain.
Gotcha.
Oh wow. Well. You've been doing this so long that Josh is finally on his own nerves.
It's it's a sad nerve, a sciatica nerve.
So stupid.
Yeah, I am. I'm totally stupid. Josh, you were talking about people like ratting on other people, though. Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, like
crazy.
Tells people they set up a hotline for people to rat on people who are out of their house to call the police and tell people.
You got callers in New York. These people are there. No shit, they're in
crazy
New York.
Thing. You see that on Twitter, okay? You see that on Twitter, and me, like you, have the same reaction. I'm like, what? You know, and you're laughing, and then you read the comments and the replies, and you realize that there's a shit ton of dumbasses out there, you know, like.
For sure.
It's fucking crazy, dude. I mean, really, like, we're the minority, I think, man. Like, these
people have
gotten
mugged
shit.
In New York, and no one's done shit. Now, if you play, like, a game of pickup basketball, they're gonna call the cops on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see the skate park?
Yes, they like push sand in on a skate park, and where was that? L.A. or
LA.
Somewhere?
It was somewhere out in L.A. or something. Yeah.
And then my favorite part of it was that the skateboarders went out and dug it back out themselves, and the part they haven't gotten dug out yet, they turned into a dirt bike track. I thought that was fantastic.
Golly, man.
So look, the thing about New York and its numbers, Americans like we get scared by numbers because we don't really understand them, right? So like. New York's
speak
had
for yourself.
Had almost 19,000 deaths from the coronavirus, and that sounds like a lot of people, okay? But then you realize that New York City, like the city of New York, has 8.39 million people in it.
Yeah. And in 2018, 80,000 Americans, 80,000 and some change, died of the flu. I'm not comparing this to the flu. I'm not, you know, people are like, don't compare it to the flu. I'm not comparing it to the flu. I'm just saying like 80,000 people died of the flu in 2018. We didn't do shit about it. You know,
people act like you're cold hearted if you look at this as numbers. But on a global scale, there is really no other way to look at it other than numbers. And so, I mean, I don't feel that is cold hearted at all. We're looking at data points to assess the dangers of this pandemic. I mean, that's how it's no different than rating a hurricane based on the amount of damage it caused. You know what I mean? That's how you would determine, yeah, is this hurricane worse or not as bad as the other hurricanes? If you're looking at pandemics, people say, oh, you just see people as numbers. Well, yeah, it's a national pandemic. Yeah. I mean, we're not running the names and stories of every person that died from this.
In New York, they average about 145 people a day dying on a normal year. Okay, 145 people a day. If you multiply that times just 30 days, okay, that's like 4,500 people, give or take, that would have died in the last month. So if you take Corona and you look at it and you say, okay, they've had 18,000 deaths, that's about four times the usual death rate in New York. It's still super small. And I'm not saying those people don't matter, because they do. I'm just saying, like, when you're talking about a pandemic that's supposedly wiping out millions of people, supposedly, like, you're talking about super small. The number just sounds really big because the population of New York is gigantic. There's 8.3 million people there, you know? We just don't have the ability to reference what that even means.
But we should. I mean, our media should. Our media should be like, there's 8.9 million people in New York City, and there's so many people died. And that maybe 20 years ago would have happened.
Well, what if Twitter was around when they built the interstate system? And they said, if this causes one death,
right,
has it been worth it? Just so people could get to work quicker and get to vacation on a quicker basis than having to go the back highways? Would it be worth it? What if people die? Now people die all the time in car accidents. We're like, oh man, that sucks. And then we just get in the car and go to work. But it's just an accepted thing that happens. And I know people say, oh, well, you can't give a car accident to somebody. Well, yeah, you can give a car accident to somebody else. But, you know, you're not going to catch, say, heart disease from standing in line next to somebody at Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. But
go ahead. Sorry, JT.
I don't. But also, it's not my job to be concerned with if your grandmother gets coronavirus. I'm just saying. My job is to do what I think is best for me and my household. If you're worried about your grandmother dying, I suggest you spend more time with your grandmother. She's a grandmother. She's probably getting close to dying. That's just science.
Or if you think you've got Corona, don't spend time with her and let her stay safe. You know what? Whatever you want to do.
Yeah. If you're worried about where your grandmother needs to spend eternity, you need to have deeper conversations with your grandmother. And don't be mad at me.
So I think, we talk about New York having this huge death rate. Okay, let me give you the number. If you break down the New York population by the total number of deaths, this is the percentage of New York that has died of the entire city. 0.000012. That's the percentage.
Wow.
0.000012. I don't even know how to, like, that's so small. And, like, people are saying, oh, yeah, but it's per infection rate. Well, new studies are showing us that the infection rate's totally different than what they think. There was a study came out today from L.A. where they're looking at antibodies, and they're basically saying that the infection rate of this thing's, like, 55 times more than what we have recorded. So, basically, it puts its death rate lower or right around flu level, you know. I'm not saying it's the flu. We don't have a vaccine for this. We do for the flu. If all of America got it, which won't happen, but if every person in America got it, at that rate, you would still see like a million people die, and that would be unfortunate and bad, and we don't need that to happen. But we also need to be able to have a conversation without somebody screaming, oh, but one person might die. Well, don't drive on the roads anymore.
Yeah. I will say this. Early on, I really thought, back in February, I was totally that guy that I really thought it was not a hoax, but being used as a political tactic 100%, you know, and it was totally from the left because it kind of made sense. But now I don't really think that per se, because the whole damn world has lost the plot about this left and right. And I think my redneck brother brought this up to me, and I think it's funny. I think Trump, one of Trump's weaknesses is I think he's super vain. And I think that early on he didn't want to shut down the economy or do these things or even talk about social distancing. But then he did because I think he wants people to like him so much, even people on the left, that he sort of pandered and said these things and did these kind of sort of politically correct things But then obviously it didn't work because everything he said, they just hated it. But like,
I think he also has a real tendency that because he's kind of a nationalist president, he tends to do what the zeitgeist, what this moment is in the American culture. Like, for example, if he had locked everything down in February, Josh, no one would have done it. Like, no one would have believed it. Everyone would have called him a dictator.
Yeah. I mean,
they called him anyway.
Dan Crenshaw
said
this.
Anyway.
Yeah, Dan Crenshaw kind of brought that up in his little spiel to Bill Maher. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, yeah. He would
have
been
because you have
a madman.
Like, right. And what Trump is, I really believe this to a large extent, is Trump is a mirror of America. And he basically takes whatever the political thing is and he just holds it up like a mirror. And if you're being a jerk to him, he mirrors it right back to you. You know, like that's how he is. If you call him great, he'll call you great. He's just stupid like that. I mean, he's literally a mirror, and it works for him. That's how he gets elected. And it's kind of what all Republican, not Republican in the sense of Democrat Republic, but all Republic figures should be. They should be a mirror of the people they represent. They should be this reflection of, my home state of Georgia feels this way. This is how I'm going to act. You know, and obviously people are going to feel different ways. I'm not saying everybody's going to always agree, but you're always going to mirror your base because that's the whole freaking point, is to mirror your base. You know, like that's what representative democracy is about. Anyway.
Yeah.
So,
you guys remember baseball?
Dude, come on, it would be good.
We used to talk about it. Like, we used to like baseball. We used to watch it and stuff. It was crazy.
I remember that, man. It was good.
We used to come in here and be bitching about, like, should Tyler Flowers be splitting time and all sorts of stuff.
And people whining about Brian Snicker making a pitch. Oh, Josh, by this point, would have been so mad that Snicker pulled Mike Soroka by the fifth inning in a game
that he wouldn't
be able to see straight. Yeah. Instead, we're arguing about, like, deep life lessons and whether or not Georgia should be open, like, you know, for other
states. What a weird, like, 2 months, you know?
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy?
I mean, it feels like six years.
I know. We had McAlpin on, JT, back in February? It was, like, end of February.
6 weeks ago?
Like,
yeah, like
weeks
six
ago,
or
man.
7 weeks ago?
You know, he's down there talking about spring training and stuff like that. We were just... I mean,
it might not even been that long. It might have been 4 weeks ago. It wasn't too long.
Yeah, it was the end of February.
Yeah, so, crazy. Yeah. Hey, before we wrap up today's episode, a little bit of news on the Dogs, JT. They sign another guy, Elijah Judy, giving the nod to the UGA.
Yeah, so Kirby's basically saying, like, look, things are crazy right now. If you want a spot, lock it up now. This kid's from out of Philadelphia, which is cool. They've gotten a lot of guys like Mark Webb, DeAndre Swift from Philadelphia. Yeah, he's pulling some weight. He's about 230 pounds, so he probably needs to bulk up, and he will once he gets to a college weight program, be able to hold his, you know, point of attack better, because you can't be 230 pounds playing on the defensive line. You'll be a liability against the run. They'll just pick you up and move you. But he's quick. He's big. He's long, not penis-wise, just long guy. Maybe he is. I don't know. But everybody says, you know, look at his video. He's already got a good array of moves, which is rare that you find that along defensive ends in high school, because they don't have to develop moves. They just push the guy out of the way because they're bigger and stronger. So you don't have to develop technique, which is a hard thing for people to learn. Jadeveon Clowney was like that. This guy was all world and for a while struggled in the NFL because he started to start learning moves, and now you're having to learn technique against the best players in the world. But in high school, he was just bigger and better. So he just,
hey, you're
in front of me? Nope, get out of the way, you know? And so
it's
hard.
Right. And that's the way a lot of guys are.
I mean, it takes a while to learn that because you've never had to. And sometimes you're at a disadvantage from a tactical standpoint when you're that talented, because you don't have to learn other things, you know?
It's what made me love David Pollack, was he was the technical guy that was a little lacking sometimes.
It was just effort.
I mean, not majorly lacking, but just saying, like,
it was a mix of effort and learned skill with him. You know, he was a two-star fullback that turned into one of the only three-time All-Americans at Georgia, him and Herschel Walker. So,
that brings up a random question, JT. If David Pollack doesn't injure his neck severely in the NFL, do we think of David Pollack more like a Tim Tebow or do we think of him more like, you know, an actually good football player, like high-end football player? Where does
I
he
couldn't
fall?
See a David Pollock being a guy that would play for too long. I don't think he's a guy that – I think he would play enough to where he's financially comfortable and then decide, hey, I want to be a dad and be at home. Like, I've made several million dollars, but mm-hmm. one of those guys that retires all of a sudden at, like, 29. You know, and then goes on and does what he does now. Now, it worked out also. Like, I hate that David Pollock broke his neck. And they told him, like, hey, you could be paralyzed if you play again. So he's like, oh, I'm good. And went from doing a local talk radio at the Zone in Atlanta and is now on College Game Day. Like, he has parlayed that quite well into a post-career. I remember listening to him and what's his name? Mike Bell, the guy who bitches about the netting at baseball games. He had the show Pollock and Bell on 790 The Zone in Atlanta. That was 10 years ago. Mm. And now he's on College Game Day. I don't know what he makes, but it's got to be well into the six figures, you know.
Georgia's kind of good at producing guys like that. You had Boog Powell that went from calling games in Nowhereville and then in Atlanta to ESPN Super Stud, you know.
Yep. Wait, Boog Shambi and Jim Powell both.
Yeah. Boog Shambi.
And
I mean, Maria Taylor. I don't know why I said Boog Powell.
Maria Taylor, Georgia grad. And look, I mean, if I can get paid slightly less to talk on the ESPN and not get my ass kicked all week.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, dude. If you're a Tony Romo right now, you're actually getting paid to call football games than you made playing one of the best teams in America.
All you do is, like, fly out on Thursday, stay in a nice hotel, eat at nice restaurants.
Interview all the coaches.
All on CBS is dying, by
interview
the way.
On the coaches like, about for an hour and a half.
Hang out, watch some practice, and you're back home Sunday night. And you do that 16 weeks a year, 17 weeks a year.
And you make $17 million per year.
You're working 4 months out of the year for $17 million. And you work 4 days a week.
Josh, I think you're going into the wrong field. Nice. You should have gone into NFL calling instead of into podcasting with me, bud. I mean, I'm just saying. Like, you know, I can't believe you turned down that ESPN job to come on the podcast and not combination, but I sure do appreciate it.
Well, yeah, I followed my heart.
Yeah.
No regrets. No regrets. Mm-hmm. I got to meet JT through this.
JT, do you know how fast he would leave us if ESPN called? Oh. Like, we would never hear from Josh again. Like, it would be today, and then tomorrow, never hear from
Do you guys
Josh
know
Brown
how fast
again.
I would leave you guys if 680 the Fan called me? I don't need to be Tony Romo or David Pollock. I can be McAlpin.
Oh, okay.
If they were just like, hey,
you'd leave us for that Bill Shanks job. Like,
I would.
J.T. Holton, Middle Georgia.
Yeah, those shows.
Middle
you
Georgia's
he's
voice.
He's got 3 hours every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can do what Bill does.
Be gone.
A trained monkey could do what Bill does, JT.
Oh, stop it. Bill's a nice guy. You'll leave him alone. he's a jerk on Twitter, but he's actually a nice guy.
Okay.
No, but I mean, like, he's not they a jerk said, hey, Twitter. Come host Guys Night Out for true. 2 hours. Hey, yeah, man, I could. I'm not saying, look, I love Kevin, but I would take his job from him in a heartbeat. We would feel bad about it.
Oh, hey, speaking of, like, announcers, and we'll wrap up on this note. You know, Tony Romo getting $17 million, and then Drew Brees just
that's a lot of money.
Didn't he sign with NBC for like $15 million a year?
I don't think he can. I don't think he's signed yet, but I think he's agreed in principle.
So he's agreed in principle to a job with NBC a year from now after he stops playing football.
Which I don't know if – I mean, I wouldn't advise that, honestly. I mean, you don't know where you're going to be in a year. I mean, who knows? You know, it seems crazy. I would just keep them bidding to the last minute and get – but I guess it is nice to know from a financial standpoint, peace of mind, hey, I've already got my next job lined up. Like, how cool is that? Like, if you told your employer, I'm giving you a 1 year's notice. And by the way, I've already got my next job lined up. Not a bad situation, right?
Taysom Hill's like, I've got a chance. And New Orleans is like,
until they draft Jake Fromm at the end of the first round.
Exactly, right, exactly. Oh, man. What a world we live in where people can get a job being paid to talk about other people.
Want
to
support the nation's leading replacement-level podcast? Put your money where your mouth is, fellow degenerates. and visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation. For only $5 a month, you'll get access to behind-the-scenes episodes and patron-exclusive podcasts. And you'll be supporting your favorite knuckleheads. Visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation.
Josh is always contemplating how to make us rich, although he's kind of failed so far, I got to be honest. That being said, I've given up. You've given up. Don't give up, Josh. There's hope. I mean, you heard JT's segment ideas with his singing.
That's true. There's hope.
There's hope. We might yet become the greatest podcast in the world. Adam Carolla, look out. Joe Rogan, here we come. The Nakahoma Nation.
Boys. One day, we're coming for you, Chatting Average.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement-level podcast. Nakahoma Nation is brought to you by Nakahoma Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation. For new episodes and content, visit NakahomaNation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Options Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.